Vad var det för svårigheter nu som var värst alltså för din far, till exempel, när han började?
Well, one of the first things there, I think, that we got there was just in a year or so we had what they call a Mexican bandit trouble. That was during the war with Germany, and they claimed that the German agents stirred up the Mexican people that they could get Texas back, you know, because originally that was Mexico property. And so there were several nights that all the Swedes would get together at Baker's and stay during the night while soldiers guarded them. We never did that because we just didn't seem to think that it would happen. But one night, why, the bandits came and they stole all the harness from my father. So when he got up in the morning, he had his mules, but he had nothing to even hitch up to a buggy with. So.
Det var en av de många svårigheter som den svenska emigranten hade när han kom till södra Texas. Och det var 1915. Det är Herbert Jansson, Lyford, södra Texas, som berättar. Och det är idag den 28 november 1974. Ja, ni, Herbert Jansson, ni är född i Arkansas, var någonstans?
Yes, I was born in Arkansas, just near Texarkana, near Texas border.
Ja, vilket
1910.
Ja. Och era föräldrar, det var, vad hette er far?
My father's name was Christian Johnson, Christensen Johnson, and my mother's name was Alma Boleyn Johnson.
Ja, och de var födda i Sverige, båda två?
They were both born in Sweden, yes.
Er far i Skåne och er mor i Småland?
Yes, as best I can remember they were.
Ja. Har er far berättat någon gång om varför han åkte över till Amerika?
Well, he said there was, at that time, there was no opportunity in Sweden, he didn't feel, and there was opportunity, so he came to New Jersey, and the only job he had there, since the only thing he could do was drive horses, he was a coachman, and would haul the people to the railroad station, and he would take the ladies shopping and take them on parties, and he did that for about 4 years till he and mother married, and they moved to Arkansas because he wanted a farm.
Ja. Och var någonstans i New Jersey var detta?
At East Orange, New Jersey. They met there. They were married in Chicago and moved to Arkansas where I was born, and then we moved to Oregon and lived 4 years, and then in 1914 we moved down to Texas in the valley.
Ja. Och han kom till East Orange, vilket år var det ungefär? Var det i början på 1900-talet då?
Yes, in the early 1800s, about 1802 or
1903.
Yeah, 1902 or 3, somewhere in there.
Ja. Och er mor, hon kom också till East Orange?
Yes, she came just a few years later.
Ja. Och har hon berättat någon gång för er om varför?
Well, also the same thing. She had an older sister who was over here and was doing quite well, so she came over here too.
Och hon bodde i East Orange?
Yes.
Ja.
She was there. She cooked in some of the wealthier homes there. She was a good cook.
Ja. Alltså er mor, hon tog en sån plats också och var kokerska och,
yes, yes,
och hjälpte till i hem, ja.
Mm-hmm.
Men din far, han tyckte om att vara farmare, eller?
Yes, he wanted to farm and raise vegetables and things, and so then of course when he finally went to Oregon, he was with the apple orchards to raise apples out there. But then he got sick out there and they told him to go to a warm climate. So that's when he went to Texas and raised cotton and cattle and milk cows and grain.
Men innan vi går ner till life for Texas och livet där nere, så ska jag fråga er, alltså som er far och mor kom i kontakt med. Hur fick han reda på möjligheten att bli farmare i Arkansas? Det var alltså första, han gifte sig i Chicago med er, min mor.
Ja, de var gifta där.
Ja.
I Chicago.
Och sen fick han ett erbjudande att köpa mark kanske i Arkansas, eller vad berodde på att han åkte just dit?
I don't really know how he found out about Arkansas, but I suppose he found out that some of the vegetables they bought in East Orange came from there, so that's what he went down to look into it.
Ja. Var han intresserad av grönsaksodlingar och sånt, eller var,
well,
eller
vill han, when he went down there, they could grow anything down there that you could think of. But he asked them if they could, what they were doing with it, and they said, well, we can't sell it. And so he thought that he knew what they were paying for vegetables in East Orange. He said, well, these people are just foolish. They don't know how to sell it. So he went down there, and he found out after he raised potatoes and watermelons and lots of things that it was right. There was no market for it. So he and mother lost everything they had made working before they were married just in a year there in Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
So when he went out to Oregon, they were broke.
Hur stor bit mark köpte de egentligen? Hur stor areal köpte de i Arkansas?
Oh, I imagine he had about 40 acres.
Uh-huh. Och det blev förlust.
Yeah, that was lost. All they got out of the deal was me.
Jaha, det var det. Så hur länge stannade de i Arkansas?
About a year. About a year. And then they were about 4 years in Oregon. I don't know too much about that because he had to work for other people then in the apple orchard business.
Men Oregon, det är väl fin klimat där uppe?
It was a fine climate, but there was something that he was allergic to in the poison ivy or something, and he got a rash and itch, and the doctor told him that he had to leave there. And when he left there, that he never was bothered with that anymore.
Så då kommer Texas in i bilden, och vem inbillar honom att det var så bra nu då, eller?
Well, I suppose there was some Swedish magazine or something that he read about it, because they came down there where there was some other Swedes. They wanted to go there with a Swedish community.
Åkte de ner och såg sig på trakten först, eller?
No, they just went down there.
Uh-huh. Och det var för att köpa mark och bli jordbrukare eller farmare.
Yeah, that's what they went to do down there.
Och var kom de någonstans först? Direkt till Lyford eller?
They're straight to Lyford.
Och det var 1914.
Yeah. Right, and just the next year we had all the bandit trouble down there. When
ja, jag skulle just fråga er om det, men vi ska börja med så att säga första året när er far kom nu. Det var många svenskar före på trakten.
Yes, there was quite a few there. There was the Gustafsons and the Lagerstons and the Eric Andersons and Albert Andersons, and there was the Carl Sundling, and there was Bakers and Bronanders and Hedbergs, Luttrings, and of course there was a preacher by the name of Wickstrom that was there preaching for the Covenant Church, and there was Wardhams. I don't know whether they were Swedish or not. Is that Swedish, Wardham?
Nej, det hörs
inte.
Och Vassbergs var det också väl?
Vassbergs was there, and Redlands, of course, they were more in Lyford. The others was out in the country. And then there was, of course, the Backlands that ran the country store there, and the Mangusons, I believe I mentioned, and the Ramgrins. And there was the Fondells too that were down there.
Och ni säger här out in the country, var det Turner Track då? Alltså,
well, Turner Track was about 5 or 6 miles west of Lyford.
Och det var det första settlement?
Yes, but Mr. Redland was a businessman in the lumber business, so he settled in Lyford.
Det är som Lyford är idag alltså?
Yes, where that's the city where I live now.
Jaha. Och så hur länge hade de varit på trakten, de svenskarna som var förut nu, alltså som kom förut?
I think some of them came a couple of years early. The first ones came about in 1912.
Uh-huh.
And there was a Swedish company that, like I told you, that were my wife's uncles,
uh-huh.
Johnson and Wallin Land Company. They were the ones that developed the Turner Tract and sold out the land and helped the Swedish immigrants get started down there.
Uh-huh.
Oh yes, and then I forgot Marion's other uncle, Arthur Johnson. He was down there farming too.
Så de blev inte ensamma då? Eller fick
no, they had three church groups down there. They had the what they call a mission friend. Some of them were
first,
free mission, and then Covenant, and then there was the Lutheran, and then there was the Northern Methodist or Swedish Methodists were down there.
Ja, och de använde samma kyrkolokal.
Yes, for a while there was a school that was used for church, and they would rotate the Sundays. You know, one would preach one Sunday and one the other, furnish the speakers.
Ja. Och ja, alltså de andra svenskarna då på trakten, de var nästan så gott som nybörjare också i frågan om farming.
Well, some like they came from various places, like the Bronanders. I think he had been a baker or something. He came from Canada. Bakers came from C.H. Baker came from Canada, and of course the Johnsons, Arthur Johnsons, and those came from Minnesota, and of course we were the ones that were a little different coming from Oregon, and many of them, like the Hedbergs and them, came from Providence, Rhode Island, and the Luttrings and Backlands and Mangusons came from Chicago, so they came from a little of all parts of the United States.
How did they dessa nu varit jordbrukare förr, tror ni, eller var de, alltså en var ju bagare.
Well, some of them were not farmers, no, they, that was all new to them. And they had
vad trodde de om Och jordmånen så, för det såg väl inte så fint ut förstås i början.
Well, they had some awful rough times there. That was
Det var igenväxt förstås.
It was a lot of brush there to be cleared up, and of course in those days everything was worked with horses and mules, and it was a slow process, and we had some awful dry years in 1916 and 17, and some of them I remember left. A man that I forgot to mention by the name of Hammerbeck left and went up in central Texas, but then he came back down. And there were some others that came down a little later on, the Nyquist, and of course there was Robert Olson's, and there was quite a few when you start to think about it.
Hur stor areal köpte er far? Hur stor trakt köpte er far?
Well, at first Dad, of course, wasn't able to buy anything. He rented land and just paid a quarter rent or something on the cotton, you know, and he did that till about 1921. Then he bought the first 40 acres, and in about 1925 he built the first house that we lived in, and from then on we lived in our own home. But many of them rented, and some of them owned, it depended on.
Men nu det första året till exempel, den marken han fick, den var färdigröjd och färdig och...
No, it had just been cleared. Ja. You would hear the coyotes sing every night.
Asså, Alltså, de hör du då?
And in the daytime you would see two or three of them in a bunch. They looked like dogs, if you know what a coyote is.
Ja.
And the woods was full of them.
Ja.
And it was so tough then that it was really dry. And then in 1917, then we moved within a mile of Lyford. That's where we farmed. It seemed like they were getting a little more rain because it was closer to the Gulf.
Men vem lärde er far nu att bli farmare där nere? För det var ju helt olika. Det var ju bomull till exempel. Det hade han ju aldrig kanske sett förut.
Well, I guess they just had to take the advice of the neighbors what to do. And
och tro att de hade rätt.
And a lot of them didn't do too good.
Nej. Alltså det fanns inga möjligheter med irrigation, som man säger, alltså att få vatten på.
Well,
det är saltvatten förstås i...
The valley of course does have quite a bit of irrigation, and it's very expensive. They had to vote some big bond issues to pay for it, and the part around Lyford, the people just didn't feel like that they wanted to expend that money.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could have irrigated. The city of Lyford does have river water for their drinking purposes.
Ja, men på den tiden fanns ingenting sånt, utan det var var och en fick klara sig själv med en brunn, så att säga.
Yes, most of them, there were some of them that had a very hard time too, like Robert Olson's. I remember about half of his time was spent hauling water in barrels to his house, which was very foolish, but that's what he did for many years.
Så han kunde inte ha någon boskap då, kor och...
Well, he had a deep well of pretty bad water that the cows would drink, but when it came to taking a bath in it or to use it for cooking or in the house there, it was just too bad.
Ja, var det saltvatten då som kom upp?
Well, it was kind of salt, and some of that water had all kinds of... It had sulfur in it and iron and aluminum and a lot of all kinds of minerals in it, and some of them were pretty bad medicine.
Så tvålen, han lödrade sig inte vidare i vattnet?
No, well, the land that we bought in 1921, it has a good well on it that we're still using.
Ja. Så, vad var det för svårigheter nu som var värst, alltså för er far, till exempel, när han började?
Well, one of the first things there, I think, that we got there was... Just in a year or so, we had what they call a Mexican bandit trouble. That was during the war with Germany, and they claimed that the German agents stirred up the Mexican people that they could get Texas back, you know, because originally that was Mexico property. And so there were several nights that all the Swedes would get together at Baker's and stay during the night while soldiers guarded them. We never did that because we just didn't seem to think that it would happen.
Mm-hmm.
But one night, why, the bandits came and they stole all the harness from my father. So when he got up in the morning, he had his mules, but he had nothing to even hitch up to a buggy with. So he had to go to town, and it was pretty rough times. But the Texas Rangers came in, and they hung a few of the Mexicans and scared them so bad that the trouble didn't last too long.
Hur länge höll det på ungefär?
Oh, probably about a year.
Alltså så pass länge?
Mm-hmm.
Alltså det var inte så så säkert att gå ute på nätterna då, utan
well, it was very uncertain, yes.
Och de kom över Rio Grande-floden till ifrån Texas eller ifrån Mexiko.
Well, at that time they didn't really have an immigration. The Mexican people just went back and forth across the river more or less as they pleased.
Jaha, så det var ingen kontroll på det utan.
There wasn't any control, no. But the Mexican people are fine people. During down through the years, they have been very helpful, you know, clearing the land and helping the farmers do all of the hoeing and picking of cotton of course they're not doing that so much anymore. But the younger ones are going to college, and it's been an interesting society to be a part of.
Ja. Som hur lång tid tog det egentligen att röja upp ett en äker eller ett tunnland som man säger?
Well, of course, everything was the prices were so cheap in those days. You could buy an acre of land in the brush maybe for $15 or $25, and then they probably a Mexican would have to maybe work 2 weeks to just clear an acre, and you'd give him $12 for that. So he was making about $12 in 2 weeks to.
Alltså kunde han klara av på 2 veckor? Kunde han klara av det på 2 veckor?
Well, yes, it depends on, but on the average, he could grub an acre in a couple of weeks. See, they were pretty smart. They knew how to dig the dirt away from some of those trees and set fire to the roots, and there was enough oil in those roots that the fire would just go right down and burn them out of the ground.
Oh.
And some of the brush and cactus, of course, they had to grub. But
ja, vad gjorde de med kaktusarna? Det var väldigt svårt om de var stora.
Well, they were hard to get rid of. They were so full of moisture. You just practically have to pile them up and just let them rot.
Men de har inga rotsystem som
Well, they don't have too much of a root system, but they become so big and so full of stickers. And then, of course, there were so many little bushes that had thorns on it. It was a hard job for them to clear.
Så kaktusarna, de får ligga och ruttna. Det är inte någon annan väg.
No, they're not very deep rooted.
Nej, men de får ligga och ruttna. Så
but they have big trunks, and they're kind of full of fiber. So even when they die and dry up, well, they're hard to get rid of.
Så hur lång tid tog det innan en god skörd av bomull kunde fås ut? Av ett par, tre år eller?
Well, of course, you raise a crop of cotton, that you raise that each year. But most of the farmers, they had a few pigs, so that they had pork and bacon, and they salted that down, and they had cows and they had chickens. And then, of course, since they farmed with mules, they didn't have to buy a lot of gasoline, a lot of expenses like that. So that they farmed very economically. And if they had a bale of cotton and got a little out of it, why, they did pretty well.
Ja. Och vi jämför nu till exempel, alltså ni har varit cotton farmer, eller ni vet vad det vill säga, och ifrån början till slut så att säga.
Yes.
Ja. Som när ni växte upp och var med er far, och hur gick det till alltså efter ett område var grubbt som man säger, och rengjort och klart? Plöjdes det då direkt med mulåsner efter?
Yes, a lot of it was worked up that way in the early days. Of course, I cleared several hundred acres of land in the 40s, and then we were using big bulldozers and caterpillars, and just bulldoze it together and burn it up, and then we root plow it with a caterpillar, and the only handwork we did then was the loose roots that were still left loose. They would be hired men to go and pick them up and burn them. But about that time, though, you see, in the early days, it was warm, and you couldn't go into the field and plow early. You'd have to wait till it got cooler because the mules just couldn't stand it.
Vilken tid på året då, ungefär?
Well, that was in the early 1920s, before tractors, you know.
Ja.
And when we got tractors, well, of course, they'll work any time if they kept cool. You could plow your land in August or so, right after you had crop was off, and clean it up and mulch it up, and that way when you got rains you held the moisture for next year. So that's when we started making good crops. But in the early days, if you didn't get a rain when you were growing the crop, you were in trouble because you hadn't been able to prepare the ground early enough to hold the moisture. The ground there is almost like a sponge. If you can get it clean and get it worked up, the rains fall on it, why, then you can hold it.
Uh-huh.
And keep it there till the crop starts using it.
Uh-huh. Så när ni växte upp då, på den tiden när de hade muråsner istället för traktorer, Då kunde de inte börja plöja förrän kanske oktober, november eller...
Well, yeah, in the middle of November and December, and it was kind of late. Och and then a lot of people, of course, they had cows, so they were not wise, perhaps, but they had the cows. So when the cotton was picked, they would let the cows run out there and eat the weeds and the grass that was in the cotton, and they would tramp the ground down hard, see. And that's not wise either. But they didn't know that, and they looked at the cows, the milk and the butter and that, so yeah. That's the way they did it, and they got by.
Ja, så vad användes för plogar? Var det tvåskäriga plogar?
There was what?
Tvåskäriga plogar, alltså two furrows.
Well, at the first, pardon me, at the first it was just one row equipment. Now, of course, we use eight row equipment on our tractors.
Ja.
And,
men på den tiden var det bara en eller två?
Yes, it was just two disc plows and maybe one, you would plant one row with a planter, mules.
Använder ni två mulor eller tre eller fem?
Well, you would use two mules. Well, you would use four mules if you had what you call a buster planter.
Uh-huh.
And then Dad got a two-row disc opener planter that planted two rows and uh-huh. used four on that.
Uh-huh. Så marken plöjdes då i, låt oss säga, i november. Och vad hände sen? Låg den nedbäddad då framåt till sådden?
Well, they didn't have a very good system. They just had harrows and light discs to try to, work it up and get it in shape with.
Nero, i februari, mars, eller?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Och då sådde ni bomullen, ja?
Well, cotton would be planted somewhere around the 20th of February and on in through March.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, in those days, we didn't have grain. The only grain we raised was sorghum that we planted. That we cut into bundles and used to feed the cows, and they put it up in stacks,
uh-huh.
to feed the cows. And
so ni kunde inte alls ha vete och råg och...
Well, they had some corn, but that never worked too good. For one thing, they didn't have a very good organized market for it.
Så efter sådden nu, eller när bomullen var i jorden, så säger då väntar ni på regn naturligtvis, ja.
Well, when it came up, then of course. In the early days, cotton has always been bothered by a lot of insects. We have what you call the boll weevil that stings the boll and lays an egg in there, and that worm hatches out in there, and he rots that boll. And then it becomes useless. And we had the flea hopper, and he's such a small little animal that we just thought the cotton wasn't putting on a crop. And now, of course, we know when we have magnifying glasses that this little flea hopper is the one that causes it, so we go ahead and poison and kill him. So that's the reason
why... När ni sår utsädet då, eller?
Well, that's when the cotton is about 6 weeks old, as the flea hopper starts hitting. And then we have worms that come along, and they didn't have any kind of poison or anything to fight it. It was just whatever happened. Sometimes they would luck into a good crop, and sometimes they didn't make much.
Men det bollweevil då, kunde han hoppa ifrån varenda planta?
Yeah, well, he had kind of wings so that he'd just get up in night air, I guess, and the wind would blow him from one field to another. So if he got started, he'd just be over the whole country. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we had dry weather. And in 1922, I remember, the Rio Grande River flooded over and covered everything in Lyford. So they were running motorboats all over the country. And we had to leave our house. It water was about 5-6 feet deep where our house was.
From Rio Grande?
From Rio Grande River, because they didn't have any flood control or anything, and really any warning system. We didn't really know until it just came upon us. And that year it came early enough to where it hit the cotton crop and everything else. But like I say, it didn't cost us much to live, so we got by.
Men det var ett svårt år. Det var
it was rough.
Vilket år var det? 1900?
1922. And there wasn't any Red Cross or anything to help anybody. Everybody just had to make out the best he could.
Ja. Och sen, hur länge växer det nu innan det blir färdigt att plocka?
Well, you plant it along in, say, 1st of March. And about the 1st of July, you will be starting to pick. You can pick as early as the 20th of June sometime. We don't anymore because with machines, we have to let over half of it be open. But in the old days when you had hands and they were broke and they wanted to start working, they would go in and maybe you'd pick the cotton two times, three times, or even four times.
Och på samma planta alltså?
Yeah, well, you just run through, pick what is open, and the bowls that hadn't opened, you just naturally have to leave. So you would pick that cotton, and most everybody did that because if it would rain on it, it would make a bright white cotton, you know, kind of dull and lower grade.
Och det är inte bra om det kommer regn när det ska plockas?
Well, if it rains, yes, it rains, see. And it'll wash some cotton off on the ground into the dirt. So people like to do that. But now, of course, we just have to just sit around because we can't run these machines up and down the row.
No.
But about two times a year, that's all.
Uh-huh.
Of course, the combines, we combine the grain just one time.
Uh-huh. Vilka öppnar sig upp först, de som är i toppen eller i...
Well, as the plant grows, it puts on bowls at the bottom. And then it forms squares first, little bitty squares, and they bloom, and then the bowl forms. And then as the bowl gets older, then it just cracks open and the cotton is there. Well, so the bowls at the bottom open first, and then the ones at the top open later.
Och när det är riktigt moget, så att säga, att plocka, är det lätt att få ut av då? Eller är det...
Yes, it picks out very easy.
Och de tar bara bomullen?
They take just the cotton.
Ingen mer.
Yeah, and then of course a little later on some of them, they just did what you call pull it. They'd pull it with the burrs and all, and then the gin would have to clean it out. But in the early days the gins didn't have the equipment to do that. You had to bring clean cotton to the gin.
Är det ett svårt eller hårt arbete alltså för händer och så att...
Well, those little burrs sometimes the very end when they become dry they get very sharp pointed. And they had to be kind of careful, sometimes wear gloves, so they'd stick them in their fingers and get pretty sore.
Uh-huh.
And of course, it was crawling on your knees a whole lot too, you know.
Och den växer så lågt?
Yes, it'd be within a few inches of the ground, you see. And the plant might be 15 inches or 2 feet, or 2 feet high. And even then, why, you'd have to bend over. And sometimes the Mexicans, they would... take a piece of an old tire or something and make some what you call knee creepers and just strap them onto the knees and creep on the ground with that. And then they're sacked behind. Usually they'd pick about 75-80 pounds in the sack and then they'd go to the wagon and that would be weighed and we paid them by weight.
Hur mycket kunde de plocka på en dag?
Well, it depend on how fast their fingers were. I had one man and his wife who picked 1,000 pounds between them every day. But then you'd have some that couldn't pick even 200 pounds a person. They just, you had to have fast fingers.
Men det är mycket det, alltså det är lätt bomullet eller inte?
Well, sometimes if the cotton stayed, if it was open and you picked it pretty fast, it seemed to weigh more, but it would dry out and get lighter, you know. Then of course the hand would complain about it.
Uh-huh.
Of course the cotton seed was still in it and that had weight to it.
Uh-huh.
If you picked a bale of cotton, we usually took about 1,500 pounds for a bale and that was of raw cotton, and when you took that to the gin you had 500 pounds of the lint cotton and about 1,000 pounds of seed. And very often in those days, we would take the seed home and put a little bran or some kind on it and feed it to the cows. The cows really liked to eat that.
Uh-huh.
It was like sugar to them.
Uh-huh. Så det kan användas, ja.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Och sen efter, när bomullen är av, då är det fram i augusti någon gång, eller hur länge kan det hänga på innan det ramlar ner och blir förstört?
Well, of course, that depends on how much wind you get and how much rain you get. Yeah, there's no 2 years alike.
Yes,
but sometimes it'll hang on quite a while.
Ja. Men vad är det för skillnad nu? Alltså, var bomullet bättre när det blir plockat för hand eller med maskin?
No, our machines are so good nowadays that we get just about as good grade with the machines. They're real good.
Men plockar de inte av en hel del som inte är moget, alltså på så vis som det är stadigt och
ordentligt? No, they do a pretty good job.
Jaha, så
we've been picking with machines now for about 15 years.
Jaha.
We haven't had a hand pick one bowl of cotton in 15 Nej. Years. And one machine can do about as much work as 18, I mean about 80 men pick about that much cotton.
Och alltså den marken som ni nu har odlat, det har inte varit irrigation eller vatten.
No, not around Lyford. Now, in other part they have, and of course they raise more cotton and more crops, but then the taxes are higher and the expenses are higher, so that many times they really are not as well off as we are.
Nej. Vad händer till exempel om det kommer alltså vatten djupet är ju väldigt lågt i Lyford naturligtvis, alltså det ligger ju väldigt lågt med havsnivån.
Well, the ground is kind of rolly, so that as the water comes through there it gets trapped in some places.
Ja, men kan det inte, har det inte hänt att det kommer upp salt i marken?
Yes,
att marken blir förstörd.
It has the last few years we're worried about it. The pressure of this water on the top, where it settles, the salt will be pushed up on the high ground around it.
Intervju med Herbert Johnson, live for Texas, fortsätter på nästa sida. Sida nummer 2, intervju med Herbert Johnson, live for Texas. Och det är idag den 28 november 1974.
Och om det nu till exempel skulle komma salt på marken, vad händer? Går det att få bort det på något sätt? Eller?
Well, it will if it continues, but if you can get drainage in there, when you get sweet water rain on that, and then get drainage so that that washes the salt out of there, you can recover it and reclaim it, and it'll be all right again.
Alltså med det menas att marken måste dräneras?
Yeah, you need drainage. We need drainage in the valley bad.
Ja, men det förekommer inte mycket att ni har dränerat marken väl?
Well, it's such an expensive project to do that. It costs a lot of money. And of course they're trying to get the federal government to help with it, and I think they should, because our soil is something that we need to preserve for future generations.
Ja. Om vi till exempel nu, om vi jämför med en jordbrukare uppe i Minnesota eller Nebraska, Dakotas. När han har gjort sitt höstplöje på hösten, så bäddar han ner jorden så att säga till nästa år.
Yeah.
Och han har inget mer att bekymra sig om, för att vintern tar ju hand och fryser bort en massa ogräs och odjur och ohyra och sånt. Men i Lyford nu här som ni är farmare.
It's
ni har en annan metod därför att ni har ju sommar
yes.
hela vintern.
We have to work it all winter long, because if we don't, there's all kinds of weeds that come up and take the moisture. That's the idea, is to keep it clean so that the weeds do not take the moisture. The moisture stays in the ground for your crop. And so we have to disk it and till it. And on the cotton now, we use a chemical that we put in the ground that kills the ground for weeds, but will not affect cotton, so that we can get away from a lot of handwork as far as hoeing. That's the way we keep our cotton clean. And we have some chemicals that we use on the grain to spray on the ground to hold the weeds down. But they go away in about a year's time, and they're not there, and the weed starts coming. So you have to do that every year.
Ja. Men vad förekom nu när ni växte upp? Alltså er far till exempel, kunde han också köra med muråsna på januari och februari innan sådden skedde, så att det blir ogräsfritt?
Well, yes, we had to do that. It was slow and you couldn't farm very many acres, but we had to do that. We had to work the ground right on up to the time we planted it.
På så vis så blir det egentligen dyrbarare för er att vara farmare nere i Florida än eller om ni skulle varit uppe i de norra staterna.
Well, yes, it was
bränslekostnaden till exempel och köra traktorer och
yes, it's expensive, but of course we do make better crops. Of course, down in the valley over the years, we've grown any kind of vegetable that you can think of, watermelons, cantaloupes, and carrots, cabbage, beets, cauliflower, just anything you can think of we can grow in the valley. And of course, we had citrus trees, and I had citrus up to about 1952, but the trees froze. Every now and then you get down to about 24 or 22 degrees, and that kills the trees or ruins them so bad. And a tree will take about 5 or 6 years to grow. And then you've got an acre of land and you put enough trees on it. You have several hundred dollars invested in trees and you have to work that for 5, 6 years and lose it in one night. It just doesn't pay, and fruit's just not making that much money. But there is a lot of orange and grapefruit and lemons in the valley.
Ja, alltså ni odlar apelsiner eller grapefruit?
Så? Yes, I had good grapefruit. They were ruby reds. They were delicious grapefruit, the best you could find anywhere. Ja. And I had lemons and I had oranges.
Ja. Betalar det sig bättre än bomull?
Well, it would if you didn't lose the whole thing overnight and you'd take your 5 or 6 years to get back in business by planting new trees.
Så träden frös bort helt och hållet?
Yeah, you just absolutely kill them. And you see, the orange tree is, the way you do that, you have a sour orange root, and you graft in the sweet orange wood into the sour orange. You graft in the grapefruit or the lemon or whatever you want, because the sweet root, it'll root rot and the tree won't last. But the sour root is real strong and makes real good system. So that's the reason you graft in the sweet oranges and the sweet grapefruit. And when you get a freeze, it usually kills it down below that graft, and then all you've got is a sour tree.
Och det går inte att ympa om, så att säga, igen.
Well, when you have that big one and you try to put a graft in that, it doesn't work very good, because these fresh sour shoots, they just grow so fast that they crowd it out.
Jaha.
You have to grub it up and start over again.
Så ni har ni gick över till bomulls
Well, we had cow milk cows, and we've had pigs, and we've had beef cows, and we've had I've had tomatoes and onions and beets and all, and those vegetables, it's just a real gamble. Sometimes you might make, and most of the times you just plow up. I plowed up tons and tons of tomatoes and onions. Couldn't sell them.
Så ni har provat på lite av varje då?
I've tried everything.
Ja. Så, men för fruktodling nu, till exempel apelsiner och grapefruit och citroner och vad det nu än är, får ni inte spruta ogräsbekämpningsmedel mer på det än på bomull?
Well, of course, the main thing that we used to have down there is you'd have a rust or scale that would be on the fruit and make the fruit look bad. It wouldn't hurt the fruit, but it made it look bad. And we used to have to take airplanes and fly over the orchards and put out sulfur. And that sulfur would sort of cleanse the trees, and maybe we'd have to do that a couple of times. That really wasn't very expensive. That wouldn't have been a problem. Our big problem was losing the thing overnight in a freeze. A lot of farmers would try to get stoves out in there or get windmills to blow the wind around. But when you have 10 acres of orchard or 20 acres of orchard, you just can't do it. I mean, you just can't. And then you're out there in the cold trying to light those fires. It just doesn't work.
Har väderleken ändrat sig över årens lopp? Alltså nu, ni kommer ihåg sen 1920 naturligtvis rätt så bra,
yeah,
framåt. Var det varmare förr om åren eller bättre vintrar?
Oh, I don't think that there has been.
Var det frost också då på den tiden ibland?
Oh yes, we had cold weather. I remember 1925, we had about 4 or 5 inches of snow and sleet on the ground, and in 1923 we did, in 1925 we did. So I don't think there's been any marked change in the climate or the rainfall. We've had wet years and we've had dry years.
Så det har inte blivit en märkbar förändring till kallare väder då, alltså?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. We've had some mild winters lately and we've had some severe winters. But you see, when you grow the grapefruit, you get them, you might raise them 5 years old and have them 5 years, so if it only freezes every 10 years, while you can see what happens.
Ja. Hur många år tar det alltså innan ett träd blir färdigt? 6 år?
About 6 years, yes, ja. Before it raises enough fruit to where you get any money out of it.
Ja. Och hur många år kan ett sånt träd stå i marken innan det...
Oh, well, it's frozen down here, so I don't really know. But I would say that a tree would be good for 30, 40 or 50 years.
Så pass länge?
Mm-hmm.
Ja. Hur långt ner fryser det? Ända ner till gränsen av Mexiko?
Well, as you go south in Brownsville, it's a few degrees warmer than it is in Lyford. And, of course, you go into Mexico down there, you'll eventually reach a place there where it never freezes, down around maybe near Tampico.
Så de är säkra på bra väder på vintern?
Yeah, they would be.
Ja. Ja. Så, om vi går över på inför jordmånen ut till boskaps uppfödning och sånt, alltså vad är det för svårigheter att föda upp boskap, till exempel kor? Vad är det för sort som används här, eller?
Well, the dairy business, for example, that's nationwide. It's just in the early days, the farmers just had some cows and they milked them right out in the open, and it wasn't really clean, you know. They would separate and they would sell the cream, and each farmer just had his own rules as to how clean it was. But then the law came in and you had to have screened in concrete places for the cows to be, and then of course you had to go to milking machines, and so that weeded out most of these farmers, and eventually the bigger dairies are having to close too, so there's not, I remember Calvin Nelson, one of our church members there down at Sebastian, he tried to go into dairy business in a big way and he just couldn't make it.
Alltså det gick, det var ingen förtjänst på det.
No, he just it's just too much expense.
Jaha.
And you're tied down so bad, and labor was hard to get. If you have 75 cows that needs to be milked and your hired hand doesn't come because he's drunk and you have to do all the work, you get tired of that.
Ja, så det betalar sig inte
And the beef cattle, of course, there's quite a few beef cattle down there now, but they're having a hard time of it.
Alltså blir vilken är den svåraste perioden på året att få fram biffdjur nu, så att säga? När det är sämst med bete, är det på högsommaren det? När det är torrt, alltså när gräset växer sämst. Växer det bäst nu vid den här tiden?
Well, no, it grows best in the warm weather, but if the moisture's there down there, it'll grow all year round.
Ja, men nu är det ju gott och varmt. Det är ju 75 nu, 70-75.
Ja. Yeah.
Men till exempel i juli, augusti, då är det ju så varmt.
Well, the warm weather grows the best. Now, you could have grain growing now and plant it and try to combine it now. And if it didn't freeze, you could do it. But you wouldn't make half as much grain as you would make growing it and combining it in June. It's just that warm period that seems to stimulate the growth and the production.
Men det är inga svårigheter att för fram korna över vintern till exempel utan hjälpfoder och så, utan de kan leva på gräset som finns.
The cows? Oh yes, and that's what they are doing here in the country now. They're the American people have spoiled. They wanted grain-fed meat with lots of fat on it, real tender. And 25 years ago we didn't have that. All that we raised was just raised on the grass and fed dry feed, and it was not as good meat, but we didn't know that then, and it's getting so expensive that we may have to go back to that. I know we will.
Ja. Så använder ni korn här nere också, eller majs då, för att få fram dem till köttproduktionsstadiet, så att säga?
Ja.
Importerar alltså majs från norra staterna. Lönar det sig?
Well, I think here in the valley now, most of our milk comes from Wisconsin and up the country. We don't even...
Det finns inga mjölkkor, så att säga.
No, no, there's no milk cows down there. The simple reason that actually cotton is and others have made more money than fooling with anything else.
Det tar över.
I found that to be true.
Ja. Ja, om vi lämnar det jordiska. Och så får jag säga, jag går över till det religiösa området.
Ja.
Missions... Förbundet, de hade sin första kyrka i Turner Tract i Stockholm, heter ju platsen, ja.
Well, that's that seems to be the impression at some hand that they had that. I know the land company promised that the first organization that put in the church in their place in Turner Tract, that they would give them 40 acres of land. So
they
were given 40 acres of land where the church was to the mission, or the mission friends, they call them. They didn't join the covenant till I think in 1934 or something like that. They were an independent work.
Yeah.
And of course the Lutherans and some were unhappy about it because they felt like that they were there first, but I don't know what it was all about.
Nej, men alla tre samfunden, metodisterna och lutheranerna och missionsvännerna, de kom bra överens. De byttes åt i...
Oh yes, they had many picnics together and lots of doings together and would have Thanksgiving doings together, you know, once a year, and in the old schoolhouse out there, and it was a good fellowship and good relation.
Och det var den kyrkogården för alla tre också där nere på samma ställe, eller?
Yes, at that time they would meet, and then the Methodists, I think the first they started meeting on Sunday afternoons, and in 1924 the Lutherans built their church in Lyford. I think they finished it about 1925, dedicated in about 1929, the Augustana Lutheran, and then they were separate from then on. And most of them at that time, like C.A. Johnson and Frank Carlson, who came from Minnesota a little later, that made up the center, and the Vasburgs, and then there was a family by the name of Choquist that came down later. They made up that's what we call the Augustana, the Swedish church there in Lyford.
Jaha. Och det var rätt i samhället där idag, eller på samhället.
Yes, there were several that I forgot to mention Mosesons that came down. They have relatives in Sweden. I think one was a Riksdagsman or a rector in the college over there, one of the brothers. And they, of course, had Mosesons had relatives in Canada. And there was also the Carl Pearson and the Leander Pearsons. And so I'm sure I'll forget some, but there was quite a group of people.
So, utav de som kom nu ner till Lyford, det var ingen som kom direkt ifrån Sverige, som ni kan komma ihåg.
I don't really know. There was a lady by the name of Amanda Johnson. She was a, and her mother was down there in the south end, and she married a man by the name of Otto Johnson, and I think that he had come from Sweden. In fact, I think after she died, he went back to Sweden a while, and then he came back to Birmingham, Alabama, and died. Uh-huh. It was Otto Johnson. I hadn't thought of them until just now.
Och sen den här det stället där ute som heter Stockholm. Vad berodde det på att de kallade det Stockholm? Har ni hört anledningen till det?
Well, the Turner Tract, it was referred to as Stockholm, and on the highway sign it still says Stockholm. On the highway sign that through there, although there's nothing left out there. At one time there was a schoolhouse, a Swedish Mission Church was there, there was a store, and there was by the store that Mr. Backlund lived in, who run the store. There was a cotton gin out there, and about the only thing left out there is a cemetery that's growed up in weeds now.
Och det var alla svenskar som bodde ute.
It was definitely a Swedish community.
Och det var svenska talat varje dag.
Yeah, they talked Swedish. In fact,
mina föräldrar nu till exempel, använder de svenska i dagligt?
Well, they became quite Americanized, so that they didn't use too much English, I mean too much Swedish.
No.
Except in the church, of course, that's where I heard it, and we're among the neighbors.
Oh. Det var svenska predikat varje söndag?
Yes, till 1935, they in the mission church, and the others I don't know. The Methodists, I think they had a man by the name of Julius Olson that was pastor there, and I think he started the English there. And I forgot about Eric Olson and the Carl Pearsons. They were down in there too. It was a big group.
Vad tyckte de äldre om när det ändrades om till engelska? Tyckte de om att höra predikan på ett annat språk?
Well, I think that's where they hurt themselves in sticking to the Swedish as long as they did, because a lot of the young people didn't pick it up, and they married some that couldn't speak, and so the churches particularly lost out quite a bit.
Ni tror att de slog över för sent, så att säga?
Well, they were a little late in doing it, yes. I didn't mind, because I understood, and I still enjoy a good Swedish sermon. That's but from the standpoint of holding on to the young people, it hurt the churches.
Ja. Men vad händer nu till exempel som i Lyford och områdena där omkring? De flesta gifter sig med pojkarna, gifter sig med svenska flickor naturligtvis. Det blir på det viset, om det fanns.
Well, it went some that way, but there was a certain amount that didn't. And
det var ju omöjligt att räcka till för alla, som man säger.
Så
vad hände i sån fall då om en svensk ättling gifte sig med en annan nationalitet, till exempel en tysk eller?
Well, there was
eller skott, eller
I can think of a family like the Swanbergs down there. They had several girls and several boys, and every one of them, they married either Germans or something else. And of course that dilutes it and plays out.
Ja, men vad hände? Gick den till den svenska kyrkan då eller gick den till fruns?
Well, the Swanberg girls, as far as I know, they go to the German Lutheran Church.
Uh-huh.
Of course, the Swanberg boys, that's all in English now, the Augustana Lutheran Church, so that the boys, Swanberg boys, their wives come with them to their church.
Uh-huh.
But there are quite a bit of Germans in that Augustana church now, too, anyway.
Uh-huh. Men till exempel, om vi säger före 1930, när det var helt på svenska. Och så det hände att en familj gifte in sig i en annan, eller en två andra familjer, eller två familjer med olika religionsuppfattning så att säga. Det var inte gott för henne att komma in i en svensk kyrka då. Hon förstod ju inte vad de sa eller han eller
no,
hur det var.
It was a problem. I still have to laugh when I think of, we had a Augustana preacher down there by name of E.P. Rodin, and he was up in Central Texas somewhere preaching, and he realized they were losing the young people, so he tried to change over Sunday nights to English, and he got by with that, and then he had two Sunday nights a month, and then three, and then four, and then he'd have a Sunday morning. So one of the older Swedish ladies, she says, "Pastor, I'm wise to you. I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to get it all English." And he says, "Well, Mother," he says, don't you think that God understands English?" He says, "Well, I think he understands English, but I know he doesn't like it."
Så era föräldrar nu, de tar aldrig på att åka tillbaka, eller de ångrar sig inte efter de flyttar ner till?
No, they never regretted it, and I don't regret it. We have a good life here. Of course, we have ties to Sweden, and you know, sentimental reasons and that, but we've had a good life here.
Hur många syskon var ni i familjen?
You mean my parents?
Ja, alltså
I don't I really
bröder och systrar som ni hade alltså. Ni har en broder till, Calvin.
I have three brothers, Walter and Paul and Calvin.
Ja.
Walter's about 6 years younger and Paul's about 12 and Calvin's about 17 years younger.
Ja. Och en broder är farmare också här i.
Yeah, Calvin is a farmer, and Walter, of course, he's in Abilene, Texas. He's president of the First National Bank out there, and Paul is in San Benito. He's vice president of a bank down there in San Benito.
Så två är bankmän.
Yeah, they're two bankers.
De var inte intresserade utav farmarlivet.
Well, you couldn't say they wasn't interested, but let's put it this way: the opportunity just wasn't there.
Så ni var äldst, ni övertog farmen.
Yes, I took over the farming when my father died in 1929 when I was 19, so that just didn't leave me much choice but to take over. And I would have liked to have been a lawyer, particularly, I think, if I had the opportunity. But farming hasn't been bad, so I can't complain.
Och er andra bror, han köpte han sin egen gård, eller?
Yes, he has bought quite a bit of his own land, and he and his wife, they're interested in other businesses too. So.
Jaha, så de har stannat kvar på trakten.
Yeah, they live there in Lifer.
Ja, och ni gifte er med. Well, en flicka är från Lifeford.
No, she was from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Minneapolis, Minnesota, ja.
Yeah.
Jaha, det är utav svensk.
Yeah, she was from the First Covenant there in Minneapolis.
Jaha.
Where Gus F. Johnson was pastor for many years.
Skogsberg, ja.
And Skogsberg, and where Paul Rees was. In fact, Paul Rees, the pastor who married us.
Så där, ja.
There in Minnesota.
Ja. Så kom han ner någon gång till Lifeford? Gus Johnson, alltså,
Gus Johnson, yes, he was in the valley several times. I met him down there. He was a very fascinating man, and to hear him preach in Swedish was a treat, because he was a master at using words. I don't know whether you've ever heard him or heard any of his records, but his Swedish voice was really something.
Uh-huh.
And his English was good too.
Uh-huh. Alltså er fru kom hit ni på besöka till Life, och det var på så vis som ni träffades i.
You mean met my wife?
Ja.
Yeah, well, her uncle was down farming, and it was her uncle, the two uncles that had the land company that developed Turner Tract, and so her mother and her brother and her, they had been down here on trips, and one time she'd gone to school about 1921 or two, and so we met when we were about the fifth grade.
Uh-huh.
Or sixth grade in school.
Oh,
so I remember from that far back.
Uh-huh.
And then later on then in about 1943, her mother wanted to come down here and visit her brothers, and so she drove her down here. She was, mother-in-law was an invalid in a wheelchair, so she had to have my wife with to take care of us.
Oh, okay.
And then it's when we met again, and we were married then that next year.
Hur lång tid tog en bilresa upp till Minneapolis 1925 till exempel?
That has really fascinated me. These early, like Paul, Johnsons and Carlsons would come down from Minnesota in a Model T, and they didn't have any road signs. They didn't have any motels, and I've often wondered what kind of trips they had. In fact, I remember Harold Ramgren told that when his parents, they came from California to Lyford, and when they got to Kingsville, there were no roads down into the valley, so their car had to be loaded onto a freight train car and hauled through the King Ranch and unloaded at Lyford. Any cars that came down, that was... And then I think around early 1920s, there was a road that you could go up through Alice and get out of the valley. But I've often wondered how they made it in those old Model T's so far.
Ja, det tog mer än en vecka, förstås, en sådan tur.
Oh, I imagine it took that much at least. And they must have had to camp out, I don't know. And without any road maps, it wasn't easy, I'm sure.
Det var nog, det fanns inte AAA på den tiden.
No, I remember... one time my father and I, and we sold a cow to a dairy in Harlingen, and we got up about 4 o'clock in the morning. We had to go about 18 miles in a lumber wagon and deliver that cow, and then we stayed during the hunt part of the day in Harlingen and came back late that night in that lumber wagon. So I've ridden through the streets of Harlingen in a lumber wagon.
Förekom där folk åkte mycket från norra staterna och ner till södra Texas på semester, som man säger, på vintern, för att få varmare klimat.
Well, now that's a big business in the valley is the tourists.
Ja, men hur länge har det hållit på, om man räknar bakåt?
Well, I guess it started maybe about 15 years ago, pretty big. So the valley they're building an awful lot of motel rooms all over Harlingen, Brownsville, and out on Padre Island, all the way to McAllen. I belong to the Gideons, and we place Bibles, you know, in each room, and we're having an awful time keeping up with the new motels that are going in and getting a Bible in each room.
Så, men före andra världskriget, om vi säger 40-talet, då var det inte så många resenärer som kom hit, förstås.
No, there was a few that would stagger in, but not the big volume that we have now.
Efter andra världskriget, så att säga.
And a lot of them are the retired people. They have Social Security. I think maybe Social Security encourages them to retire sooner. I don't know. But it's big business, mainly among the elderly people.
Det är ingen av de som kommer hit nu från Chicago, Minneapolis och även från Kanada som har åkt tillbaka eller ångrat sig eller på så vis.
Oh, I suppose in life there's always regrets, but I think most of them are happy.
De flesta har stannat.
Yeah. Sure did, except now the young people again are having to leave us because farms are bigger and bigger tractors, and so these farms are now getting into the hundreds of acres where you used to be.
Det är väl omöjligt för en ung pojke att köpa eller överta en gård, så att
just be almost impossible unless he had
han får ärva den utav sin far,
yeah, unless he had a father, an uncle or somebody that would help him.
Så vad gör de yngre nu, alltså ättlingarna utav de gamla svenska emigranterna, vart tar de vägen? Går de till storstäderna och söker arbete eller?
Well, like my two boys, they're here in Austin, both of them in business here now.
Jaha. Så de fick åka upp
150
miles norrut.
Yeah, this, but what it amount to.
Jaha.
And my brothers, who is in Harlingen, all of his three children are in Houston.
Jaha.
So that's the way it goes.
Men er äldsta pojke nu, är inte han intresserad utav farmarlivet?
Well, no, I don't think either one of them are really interested. The youngest one has a problem with dust and stuff. He gets his nose all stopped up. He gets out into the field, and it's if you're that way, well, you
it
gets very unpleasant.
Oh.
Otherwise, I think they might have enjoyed it.
Som er far nu när under de åren han var jordbrukare här nere, kunde han också spanska språket så som ni kan?
No, he didn't learn the Spanish, but of course I grew up, when I started school I could speak very little English, mostly Swedish, and so I had to learn English to keep the teacher happy, and I had to learn Spanish if I wanted to play marbles, because about 80% of the children on the school ground were what we call Mexicans, who spoke the Spanish language.
Och de använder det för jämna.
Well, they wouldn't. They still do. Spanish is spoken, and most of the Swedish young people, some of them learn to speak it very, very well. You couldn't hardly tell them from.
Och det har ni haft användning för sen när ni har anställt Mexikaner?
Well, I used it up until lately. Now the younger Mexicans have gone to school, but the older ones, if you wanted to tell them what to do on a tractor or something, you practically had to speak Spanish to them or work with them. So we would talk Spanish practically entirely. There were weeks that I talked more Spanish than English.
Uh-huh.
Much more.
Är de bra arbetare, mexikanerna, så när de kan lita på dem och så i?
Well, yes, I would say they're fair average, they're dependable, and they're hard workers, and of course 50 years ago we probably thought they were dumb because all they could do was manual labor, but now their grandsons and granddaughters are getting college degrees, so that shows that the potentialities were there. They just didn't have the opportunity.
Är de mekaniskt intresserade eller har talang så att säga för motorer och sånt, så att de kan laga och reparera om det behövs?
Oh yeah, they're mechanically inclined. They can build and they can do mechanical work, and when they have the opportunity to develop themselves, they're good. In fact, I know.
Slut på intervjun, och det här samtalet var med Herbert Jansson, live för Texas. Och det är idag den 28 november 1974.